From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, history is made in the New York State Senate. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on Governor Cuomo's meeting with President Trump over funding for a new Hudson River rail tunnel. And $25 million in grants will go to aid 13 water infrastructure projects in the North Country. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. History was made at the state capitol on Monday as the Senate elected its first woman and African-American, Andrea Stewart Cousins, as its leader to head the chamber in January. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
I have been unanimously elected the majority leader.
Senator Stewart Cousins, who has led the Democrats in the Senate since 2012, is poised to become the Senate's next majority leader after Democrats won 40 seats in November's elections. Stewart Cousins was a teacher and a journalist before being elected to represent Yonkers in the Westchester County Legislature. She won her Senate seat over a decade ago. She took a moment to reflect on the big changes her selection represents.
This is an incredibly proud moment for me. It is a moment that I don't believe, certainly when I came here, I would have ever dreamt of.
Stewart Cousins says among the top priorities for the Senate Democrats will be enacting the Reproductive Health Act. It would codify the abortion rights in the U.S. Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade into New York law, also strengthening gun control laws, as well as instituting early voting in New York. She will preside over a diverse conference. Some are insurgent Democrats who beat 6 of 8 former breakaway Democrats in the Democratic primary in September and seek single-payer health care for New York and significantly more spending on public schools. Other new senators elected in November represent Long Island and the Hudson Valley, where property taxes are a concern, and who may want to hold the line on any new major spending programs. But Senator Stewart Cousins says she expects consensus will come.
I don't think it's a collision. You know, the things that we're going to be addressing, obviously, are things that are very, very important to New Yorkers. Healthcare, quality education, all these things are why we're here. So we're not expecting collisions. We're expecting the opportunity to try and figure out the best way forward on these important issues for New Yorkers.
She says she wants to first sit down and talk about all of the issues with her 15 new members. Senator Brad Hoylman, who was elected to the Senate in 2012, is now one of the more senior senators in the Democratic Conference. He says he thinks Democrats can come up with a plan that includes funding for schools and health care without greatly increasing taxes.
I hope what we see in a newly led conference is a much more deliberative body. And I think that's what Andrea Stewart Cousins was discussing today in terms of our own membership, experts, and the public at large.
Republicans, meanwhile, are down to just 23 members, and they'll have far less power than they had when they controlled the chamber. Senate Minority Leader-elect John Flanagan says he and the other Republicans will do their best to draw attention to issues and legislation that they might disagree with.
I'm scared to death about what's coming. You know, I'll give you a couple of examples. I heard from Somos, one of the outposts of that is that we're going to have illegal driver's licenses for anyone who's here, no matter what their status may be. We are stridently opposed to that.
Flanagan predicts that the bill to enact single-payer health care would bankrupt the state, and he says raising taxes on the wealthy would cause more people to leave New York. In a statement after Stewart Cousins' election, Flanagan called the Democratic leader a class act and a truly extraordinary person and said he hopes they can work together. Governor Cuomo, who helped in 2018 to get more Democrats elected to the Senate, says he wants to work with Stewart Cousins and the Senate Democrats to stand up to the extreme conservative agenda in Washington. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, the announcement from the governor that he had a productive meeting with President Donald Trump. This has to do with the funding for the key train tunnel that connects Manhattan to New Jersey. This is the funding that he says that New York needs to get this tunnel done. It's 100 years old. The president, for his part, said he had a productive meeting with the governor, and really, they get along just fine.
You know, David, nothing means anything. The idea that Cuomo correctly took on Trump during this election cycle as his number one enemy, and the people of New York responded with great enthusiasm, really is extraordinary that both men can now look into the camera and say we had a productive meeting, and basically, you know, we're doing very well together. I guess it was Mike Tyson once said, it's just business. It's just business. The whole problem here is that the credibility of politics is lowered when somebody who is correctly saying Trump is a bad man and boy is he bad is somebody who is capable of giving us some money for New York. Now, here's Trump with all his business interests in New York. He wants access also. We know that virtually nothing can be divided from the self-seeking clause that a president has to make his businesses grow. So should there be another tunnel to New York? Of course there should. But there is some surrounding language here that's very interesting.
Well, Alan, you spoke to the Assembly Minority Leader. Brian Cole was Republican, the only upstate Republican leader, and he is in the minority in the Assembly, despite the fact that they, he mentioned this, picked up two seats in the midterms there. And you had a wide-ranging conversation with him about what it means to be Republican in New York now that the legislature has gone Democratic.
Well, let's face it. The Republicans are screwed unless, of course, the Democrats help them along by behaving like Democrats and forming a circular firing squad and starting to do one of two things, either contesting with each other for power. That doesn't look like it's happening in either the Senate or the Assembly thus far. That would be a bad thing for them. And another is that some people on both parties, but often in the Democratic Party, think that being elected is a license to steal, and many of them have gone to prison. If that stuff starts to happen again, well, you know, they'll ruin it. On the other hand, right now, just as the Assembly did, because they are now in a majority, a comfortable majority, if they can keep that majority up, the possibility of the next time that there's redistricting, otherwise known as gerrymandering, occurs, they're going to do it in their favor, as the Republicans always did it in theirs. That's how they kept alive, despite the fact that there are so many more blue voters in New York State than there are red voters, in other words, Republicans. So it would appear that unless the Democrats screw it up, the Republicans are in real bad shape. Their next ability is going to be what happened with George Pataki. In other words, you can have a Democratic governor for a long time. Every once in a while, people get disgusted or want to change, and they elect a Republican. And Pataki, who's not exactly the most prominent Republican anybody ever heard of, a decent guy, he stayed there for three terms. That's a lot of terms. So the next time the Republicans are going to have a spot in New York State is going to be like in my home state of Massachusetts, by electing a Republican governor.
Of course, Andrea Stewart Cousins became the first woman to be elected the head of the state Senate in New York.
This is a remarkable changeover. The Democrats now have a very good leader. Symbolic, of course, a woman first, a black woman first. However, the Democrats in New York State, I have to say, have a way of screwing it up. We've talked about circular firing squads, and we have watched the kind of nonsense as people get sent to jail and other things once they achieve power, thinking that power brings with it the ability to break the law. Now, I'm not saying that the people who are in the Senate right now are going to do that. But I'm going to say it worries me that the past has indicated what can happen here. And if these people don't watch what they're doing, they're going to lose it all right now, David. But they have two great leaders in Andrea Stewart Cousins and Mike Gianaris from Queens. If they listen to these two, and if they don't start doing stupid things, the Democrats will be in power for a long time.
two races to talk about that came to fruition this week. That's the Western New York race involving the indicted Congressman Chris Collins, who wins, and the second in the Mohawk Valley down and through the Binghamton area, the district, who now will be represented by Anthony Brindisi, the Democrat, after Claudia Tenney, the Republican, conceded.
Let's take the last one first, the Brindisi victory. Of course, he knows that the Utica area and around have a penchant for electing Republicans. That's why Claudia Tenney was there. He's making sounds as to how he wants to work with Trump when he can. Predictable, but not admirable. You know, there are many people who won't like it, but that's how he got himself elected, and that's what Brindisi is going to continue to do, because he needs some of those other votes in order to survive. And the first, Chris Collins, well, the guy's indicted. We're hearing that he's not going to have a trial until 2020. That's a long way off. You know, meantime, he'll be in the Congress. I predicted that he would win, and he won. It's a Republican district. An indictment is just an indictment, but he survived, and he'll go on to represent his district in Congress, unless, of course, they work out some kind of deal with him, which is something like, okay, you resign, even though you may have committed a felony, and we let you off the hook. You don't have to go to jail.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartoff. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustino. The state of New York recently announced nearly $25 million in water infrastructure grants would be distributed to North Country communities for 13 projects. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
New York's Clean Water Infrastructure Improvement Act of 2017 allocated $2.5 billion to preserve water quality across the state. In mid-November, Governor Andrew Cuomo's office announced $270 million in grants would be distributed statewide, including $24.6 million for projects in the North Country. The town of Crown Point is in line for more than $1.2 million. Supervisor Charlie Harrington says that to comply with a consent order from the State Department of Environmental Conservation, the town plans to build a new wastewater treatment plant.
Our existing plant is antiquated to the extent that any and all repairs have to be specifically made by a machinist. So it certainly points to just build a new wastewater treatment plant.
Harrington says the state grant will help Crown Point build a sand-filtered treatment plant.
It certainly goes a long way in attempting to keep our user fees below the state requirements, and we are hopeful to receive other funds as well.
The town of Plattsburgh is expected to get just over $3.1 million for drinking water system improvements. The town is in the midst of a multi-year plan to upgrade its water infrastructure, and Deputy Supervisor Meg Lefebvre says the grant will fund some of the drinking water portion of the capital plan.
We have some really great experts who were able to bring this capital improvement plan together over a couple years of planning, and now the state has come forward to recognize the importance of investing in infrastructure. So we'll be dealing with water mains on the old base, upgrading booster pumps at one of our main stations, we'll be creating redundancies within the system, and well improvements.
The city of Plattsburgh is scheduled to receive about $4.3 million for upgrades to its water pollution control plant, which is located at the confluence of the Saranac River and Lake Champlain. Mayor Colin Reed says the state grant covers about a quarter of the upgrade costs.
There's a number of different improvements that we're going to be able to make that are spelled out in the grant. Odor control around our sludge dewatering facility there. Covers and odor control over our aeration tanks. Some aesthetic visual control around the plant itself. These are improvements. These aren't just regular maintenance. These are to make the plant better, more aesthetically appealing, better for our lake, better odor control and visual control, and hopefully will allow us to have much greater likelihood of development down in that area by doing so. So we're pretty excited about it.
The grants announced by the governor's office are intended to fund clean and drinking water projects in Essex, Jefferson, Lewis, Clinton, Franklin, and Hamilton counties. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A recent study shows that a common mosquito repellent is lethal to larval salamanders. It's an ironic twist given that larval salamanders serve as a check on these nuisance insects, and the implications go even further. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn spoke with Emma Rosie, a freshwater ecologist at the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies in Millbrook, New York. Rosie is also the co-author of the study on these repellents. She begins with why she and her co-authors embarked upon the report.
A recent study shows that a common mosquito repellent is lethal to larval salamanders. It's an ironic twist given that larval salamanders serve as a check on these nuisance insects, and the implications go even further. I spoke with Emma Rosie, a freshwater ecologist at the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies in Millbrook, New York. Rosie also is co-author of the study on these repellents. She begins with why she and her co-authors embarked upon the report.
The lead author, Rafael Almeida, was visiting us from Brazil as a visiting PhD student at the Cary Institute. And he came right at the time that Zika was so common in Brazil. And he raised the issue with me because I work on contaminants of emerging concern, and he asked me, have you ever done any work on insect repellents? Because people are using them a lot in Brazil right now because of Zika, justifiably so, right, to protect themselves against mosquitoes. And I said, no, I've never done any work on these mosquito repellents, but we know that they're in surface waters, but we didn't know what the effects were. And so he looked in the literature, found not really much research at all on whether or not insect repellents that we use to keep us safe from mosquitoes and other insects, when they end up in rivers and streams and ponds, do we know what they do in the environment? And we didn't, and so that's why we did this experiment.
She discusses the type of insect repellents and ingredient of concern.
Yeah, so we studied two different insect repellents that are commonly used in the U.S. and in other parts of the world. One of the insect repellents had DEET as the active ingredient, and another insect repellent had picaridin as the active ingredient. And what we did was we exposed salamander larvae to a couple different concentrations of these insect repellents with those active ingredients. And we wanted to see whether or not at low concentrations that are analogous to what's found in the environment, whether salamander larvae would be sensitive to these compounds. And what we found was that the insect repellent that contained DEET did not have an effect that we were able to observe on the salamander larvae. But the insect repellent that contained picaridin, after 4 days, the salamander larvae started showing tail deformities. And then at the end of our experiment, there was a significantly higher number of individuals that died due to exposure to this insect repellent containing picaridin than the control or those that were exposed to DEET.
By day 25, 45 to 65% of picaridin-exposed salamander larvae died. Salamander larvae eat mosquito larvae, a natural control mechanism.
Salamander larvae around here in the Hudson Valley are very common in vernal pools and wetlands that fill up in the spring. These larvae are voracious predators of mosquito larvae. So mosquitoes have an aquatic phase when they're in the larval stage, and they live in ponds and streams and containers. And when salamanders are there, they eat the mosquito larvae. And so the other experiment that we did was we wanted to see, well, are mosquito larvae sensitive to these insect repellents? So we did the experiment again, but this time instead of putting salamander larvae in, we put mosquito larvae in. We found no effect of either of those contaminants on the mosquito larvae. So the mosquitoes are not sensitive to these, but the salamander, the predator of the mosquito, is sensitive to these insect repellents, the one insect repellent.
And here's how the study results may be applied more broadly.
The important thing to recognize is that we use compounds in our everyday lives, things like insect repellents, detergents, antibacterials, all the drugs that we take, and they get into our waste stream. So when we use an insect repellent and then you take a shower and it washes down the drain, it potentially ends up in the environment, depending on how we treat our waste. And if those insect repellents end up in a pond where there are salamander larvae, then there's a potential for those to have effects on the salamander larvae. Now, the salamander larvae eat mosquitoes. And so if you harm the predator, you might get more mosquitoes coming out of that pond than you would have before because of the use, the human use of these compounds. It's really important for people to understand the things that we use in our everyday lives are getting out into the environment with unknown ecological consequences.
And she describes what's next.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting follow-up studies to be done about this to try and understand these insect repellents, the active ingredient insect repellents. It would be really great to know, we did this in a lab where we exposed salamander larvae just to the insect repellent. They weren't exposed to all the other stressors or ways to get away from these insect repellents out there in a pond. And so are these same results that we saw in the lab, would they translate into a pond around in the area here? Right. So would they translate in nature? We predict that they would, but a study to really understand how exposure in the wild would affect these organisms is an obvious launch point. The other thing is that, again, we need to invest in research to understand these chemicals that we use in our lives and what the environmental consequences of them might be, because they might be surprising and have surprising indirect effects on human health and on the environment that we didn't really understand before.
In the salamander study, there is a question of timing of both repellent use and amphibian reproduction, which Rosie says is key. Many amphibians breed in a single seasonal pulse, putting all their eggs in one basket, so to speak, and mosquitoes have an extended breeding season and reproduce multiple times. The study is published in Biology Letters. There's a link at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1848. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers.
representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.